Chapter 14. It had been a Riley Pleasant surprise to Adele when she learned that most spacers didn't like weightlessness any better than she did. A properly functioning starship was almost always accelerating at 1G, providing the illusion of weight. The exception was during the time a ship was in orbit, preparing to land. Tegeli now rotated below the Princess Cecile. A haze of greyish scenes and the varicolored smears of low-lying islands and the life-encrusted shallows around them. It wasn't particularly inviting, but at least when the officials from the picket boat cleared the Sissy to land, there'd be gravity again. Adele smiled at her display. The secret to contentment appeared to involve finding pleasure in small things, though gravity didn't seem a small thing when you were without it. "We're carrying no cargo whatever, Commander Mendez," Daniel said to the pasty-looking official who'd come aboard on a line from the picket boat. For all the fellow's impressive rank, his vessel was a bucket with neither antennas nor high drive. The crew establishment was 5, but according to her log, she'd been operating with 4 these past 2 months. "Only stores for our own use, and those are rather sparse at the moment. Because of riots in San Juan, we left Todos Santos before we completed loading." Adele, examining Tegeli's starship's landing records, pursed her lips. Although technically Daniel wasn't lying, and under the circumstances a flat lie would probably have been a better choice than telling the commander that the Princess Cecile had fled San Juan after her crew fought a street battle with Alliance spacers, eventually drawing in large numbers of the local military. Not that it had been the Sissy's fault, of course, but that was a sort of detail that local officials might find less than reassuring. Mendez sniffed. "Politics. We don't go in for that sort of nonsense on Tegeli. People mind their own affairs." Such as they are, Adele thought as she reviewed the records she just copied from the planetary database. Tegeli had logged only 38 landings in the past quarter. Todos Santos saw that many in a day or two. Fishing and marine products were the planet's main exports. Imports were a limited quantity of luxury goods, supporting the sailing direction's description of Tegeli as having a highly stratified society. Stratified but languid, which is another way of putting Commander Mendez's comment about people minding their own affairs. The planet had almost no volcanic activity. There was no moon, and because Tegeli was 108 million miles from its sun, the solar tides were mild. The human inhabitants appeared to live in a pattern that mimicked the placid nature of their environment. "Now I see that you're not the owner of this vessel," said Mendez, consulting the uppermost of the sheaf of flimsies in his gloved right hand. He wore a skin-tight vacuum suit whose patches made Adele's lips wrinkle sourly just to look at, though she supposed the holes weren't life-threatening. A split in the fabric would just mean minor hemorrhaging, a few more spider veins in the commander's skin. Prolonged weightlessness, because the picket boat didn't carry sufficient reaction mass to keep away on, had done more serious damage to his body. "The owner is Count Klimov?"
"We are the owners, Gorgi and I," said Valentina, standing with her husband at the front of their annex. "Is there a problem?"
The Klimovs hadn't mastered weightlessness, but they were able to hold themselves vertical in one place instead of drifting about the way Adele would have done if she hadn't been strapped in. She was, of course, strapped in. "Not at all," said Mendez, turning to face the Klimovs. "Not at all, but I note that you haven't listed guest friendships with anyone on Tegeli. Is that the case?" "No," the Count said. "I regret to admit that we've never heard of your planet until just before we took off from Todos Santos. Our arrival here is a whim." The truth was a little more complex than that, though Count Klimov might not understand clearly the reason Dana had shaped their course to this backwater. Tegeli was an unlikely landfall for any vessel, but one deliberately setting out for it. While the Princess Cecile wasn't short of food, air, or reaction mass, she couldn't afford to spend an indefinite additional period in space without replenishing those stores. Tegeli could supply their needs without a likelihood of the Goldenfels arriving before the corvette had finished loading.
"Well, a fortunate whim for us, then," said Mendez, "particularly for the Pensuelas of Lusa City."
He consulted a second sheet of the flimsies he held. "Yes, that's right," he said. "Since they were the next on the Rota, they were alerted as soon as your vessel announced its arrival. They'll be very pleased." Mendez glanced around the bridge, then focused his attention on Daniel. "I wonder, Count Klimov, are any of your ship's company of the land-owning class as well?" Instead of waiting for the Count to speak, Adele said from her console, "Lieutenant Leary, our captain, is the son of Speaker Leary. I myself am a Monday of Chatsworth." She waited for Mendez to turn before giving him a cold smile. "I'm the Monday of Chatsworth, as a matter of fact, if it matters to you. We're members of what are called the best families of the Republic of Cinnabar." Daniel looked surprised at Adele's forwardness. She hadn't had a way to warn him before she spoke. According to the information she was pulling together, there wasn't a private inn anywhere on the planet that was better than a hog wallow. It wasn't of great concern to Adele if she lived aboard the Princess Cecile while they were on Tegeli. She wanted to use what written archives were available, though, and she knew Daniel liked the opportunity to socialize whenever they touched ground. That required that they be received by the patrons, the landowners of the planet. "Oh, but that's wonderful," Mendez said. He glanced his first flimsy again. "I'll be able to accommodate two or more of the patrons. That will be..." "No," said Daniel, drawing eyes back to him. "Commander Mendez, it won't be practical to divide our group while on Tegeli. If the Pansuelas can't receive so many as four of us, then I'm afraid Mistress Mundy and I will have to remain aboard our vessel." "That isn't the difficulty," said Mendez. "You see, we have so few visitors of proper quality that the regulations allotting them among our patrons are very strict. Still, if you insist..." Shuffling the pronouns he boarded with had caused him to rise slightly. He raised an arm absently, tapping the ceiling with his finger, and reversed his slow progress. While not a prepossessing man, the time the official spent on picket duty had obviously made him a past master of maneuvering and weightlessness without overcorrecting. "I do," said Daniel formally. "I must." "Then I must perforce agree," Mendez said with equal formality. "I will inform the Pansuelas that they will have the honor to receive four visitors at the very highest rank." He shook his head in wonderment. "They'll be the talk of all Tegeli, they will," he added. "They always had a reputation for being a lucky house. By now, goodness!" Mendez turned, angling his body so he could push off for the airlock by which he'd boarded. "Excuse me, Commander," Daniel called at the official's back. "Are we cleared to land, then?" Mendez continued his rotation, bringing himself fully around. "What? Why, yes, of course, at Lusa City, as I told you. Welcome to Tegeli, patrons." "Welcome indeed," Daniel agreed, giving Adele a broad smile of anticipation. "We'll let you lead," Count Klimov said. In response to his gesture, Daniel strode whistling across the boarding bridge ahead of his employers. The vehicle waiting on the wooden quay beyond looked like a boat with fat tires. The Sissied cooked the basin's mud bottom while settling down. Though warm, brackish water had immediately flowed back around the vessel, the stench of burned organic material formed a haze in the muggy air. It was nothing to spacers used to working high in the yards of a starship in the Matrix, but landsmen like the Klimos might reasonably find it daunting. Insectoids flew about the harbor, visible mostly as glitters in the air or dimples on the surface of the black water. One hovered momentarily before Daniel's eyes, a body as small and round as a pea, supported on transparent shimmers. Before he could decide whether to brush it away or just duck, it zipped off on business of its own. Daniel's duties as captain of a ship which had taken off hastily had kept him too busy to give more than cursory attention to Tegeli's natural history. The planet's seas included impressive specimens of marine life, but he should have studied the fauna of the tidal basins with greater care. That was what he'd be in contact with. Daniel grinned. It was no different in the RCN. People oohed and aahed over the battleships, but fleet actions were rare even during periods of full-scale warfare. The commanding officer of the corvette Princess Cecile had seen more action than some full admirals. The tangled forest surrounding the Lusa City harbor might have been a single plant. Individual stems, trunks, branches were rarely more than 4 inches in diameter, and the treetops were only 60 or so feet high. From above, the Sissy descended. Daniel stepped aside to allow the other three to reach firm, well, slightly muddy ground. The Klimov strode on toward the vehicle, but Daniel gestured Adele close and murmured, "Is there a customs official or the like on his way? I don't want to miss some necessary formality because we left before the port commandant finished his siesta." "They appear to take a relaxed attitude toward that sort of thing," Adele said. She too spoke quietly. "I couldn't find any customs records. Ships pay a landing fee irrespective of their cargo or even their size, though that may be because none of the ships landing on Tegeli are very, very big."
"Daniel, come," Valentina said, waving. "The boy is waiting to take us to Pansuela House."
Daniel nodded assent and walked the rest of the way up to the path of the car. At his side, Adele murmured tartly, "The boy is 40 if he's a day. Based on what I've found regarding Tegelan society, the Klimovs should find themselves right at home here." The driver, who was indeed 40 or more, a swarthy, muscular man with flaring mustachios, held the rear door open for them. Daniel suspected the car's thick sides were flotation chambers. The wheels and their balloon tires were wider than they were high. Instead of normal treads, they were scooped into a series of curved paddles. Though the vehicle had very low clearance, its muddy underside was obviously intended to skid through muck as the wheels splashed forward. As the driver handed Adele into a back seat, Hogg and Tovera conferred under their breath. Tovera stepped in after Adele, seating herself on the rear deck with her legs between the bucket seats. The attaché case was in her lap. Hogg got into the front while the driver stared in puzzlement at Tovera.
"That's quite all right," said Daniel as he got in. "We prefer having a servant with us in the back."
It wasn't worth arguing about. If Hogg and Tovera had decided it between them, that was most likely the way it was going to be. "Just drive us to the Panzuelas," he continued aloud as he pulled the low door out of the driver's hand. "How far is it, anyway?"
"Not far, patron," the driver said, bowing again.
He walked around to his door. "It's 1.7 miles," Adele said quietly. She started to get out her data unit.
"I can show you..."
"No need for that," Daniel said, smiling. "Though, when we have some leisure time, if you have a natural history database..." "Of course," said Adele, in much the same tone as if he'd asked if she'd remember to bring a change of clothes.
"Excellent," Daniel said as the driver clutched in the diesel engine and turned the car tightly. "This appears to be one of those worlds where nature comes to us."
They moved off at gathering speed. The road was a dirt causeway built a few feet up from the sea level by mats of plastic sheetrock, anchored by pilings cut from the interlacing trunks of the forest itself. So far as Daniel could tell, the region was a tidal flat with no features except for homogeneous forest, but for some reason the road curved back and forth like a snake's track. He leaned closer to Adele's ear and said, "I see why they were bringing processed fish to the warehouse by barge. Ground transport of bulky goods would be next to impossible, even between points on the same island." Adele looked at him and nodded, indicating she'd heard him and understood. Then she went back to whatever she was doing on her data unit, regardless of the car's motion, indicating that she didn't care about the difficulties of bulk transport on Tegeli. Given the amount of noise the wheels made, Daniel didn't expect to see much in the way of wildlife. As they came out of the forest onto a road with high curbs and houses to either side, a blister swelled suddenly from the trunk of a tree and launched itself outward with an undulating motion. While flying, the creature had a glistening translucence, but it vanished completely as soon as it landed on the weathered slats of a house 100 yards away. The wooden buildings on the road from the harbor had been raised 4 or 5 feet above the ground on pilings. Chickens scavenged around the houses and in the street. Women sat on the steps, sewing and cutting vegetable against their thumbs as they chatted in high musical voices. Daniel looked up and down the street. The impression he got of this district was simplicity rather than poverty. The women's clothing was a mix of colors tending toward reds and yellows, and the houses were painted bright pastels even though much of the paint had flaked away. The street was wide, but pedestrians were the only traffic. Once the car passed a pair of men trudging along with the carcass of a pig slung between them, but for the most part Daniel saw women with bundles or wicker baskets on their heads. Occasionally they stopped and looked at the vehicle in blank-faced wonder. Adele leaned close and said, "There's canals at the back of the houses. They carry the commercial traffic and act as sewers, I gather." Daniel nodded in understanding. They were coming to the dwellings of the wealthy, though as they approached, Daniel thought what he saw ahead was the industrial district. The 3- and 4-story houses were built of concrete, but their window gratings were iron-worked into patterns of remarkable art and delicacy despite the smears of rust on the walls beneath them. Here drainage ditches bordered the roads on both sides. Some of the houses had culverts to their substantial front gates, but many used instead drawbridges, which they kept raised. Bunting draped the facade of a building 1/4 mile in the distance. The gates were open and the servants stood in the street waving flags. Daniel increased the magnification of the goggles he wore with his second-class uniform.
"Good God, that's cinnabar sandal," he said. "The Novi Sverdlovsk flag is a red eagle on a black and white ground," Adele said into his ear. "Is that..." "Yes, by God, it bloody well is," Daniel said, focusing one of the flags, alternating with those of cinnabar. "Good heavens, they didn't have long to run them up, did they?"
The tire slowed from a thrump back to a flop, flop, flop. The driver turned hard. The horizontally mounted steering wheel didn't have power assist, and drove through the arched gateway into a courtyard almost filled by 12 or more similar vehicles which were already parked there. The car stopped and the diesel rang silent. Adele leaned close to Daniel as they got out, murmuring, "The Panzuelas invited all the other landowners in Lusa City when they learned we were aboard. There'll be additional guests from neighboring islands later in the evening." A couple accompanied by footmen walked down the spreading stone staircase from the wing opposite the entrance. The man was a tall, distinguished 60-year-old. The woman was somewhat younger, and her bosom could almost be described as overdone. She embraced Count Klimov while the man took Valentina's hand and held it as he said,
I'm Enrique Panzuela. This is my wife, Flora. We are honored, deeply honored, to have guests of your obvious nobility.
The locals on the balconies waved, the men handkerchiefs, the women ribbons of lengths of lace. They didn't raise their own voices. The servants standing behind them cheered loudly. Flora released the count and threw herself into Daniel's arms.
Master Lady of Bantry, she said,
raising her lips for what was certainly not intended to be a peck on the cheek.
Madam Panzuela, Daniel said, keeping his own face lifted toward the woman waiting on the balcony.
Some very nice ones there, yes, indeed. He patted the lady's shoulder blade with a masculine firmness.
Honored to meet you, madam, and your esteemed husband.
Quickly reversing his motion, Daniel detached himself. He extended his right hand to Enrique, effectively preventing Flora from gripping him again. A striped creature, the size of a cat, humped halfway across the courtyard, then stopped to raise and lower its front half repeatedly in quick succession. It had either no legs or very short ones. A pair of tiny bright eyes framed its prehensile nose.
"Very good of you to grant us your hospitality," Daniel said as he pumped his host's hand with verve, trying to mask the fact of Madame Panzuela's obvious play for him,
though he didn't imagine it was a new experience to her husband.
Bloody hell, perfumed powder from the lady's bosom was smudged across the front of Daniel's dress grays. He'd be lucky if he didn't sneeze.
"Ours is the honor, Captain," Panzuela said.
His speech had a slight glaze, and he moved with a stiff formality of a drunk. Daniel couldn't smell alcohol in his breath, but the old man was either ill or on some drug.
"Will you and your fellow patrons accompany me? I wish to introduce you to our friends before dinner and to show you Panzuela House."
"Yes, I'd like to meet your friends," said Valentina,
eyeing her husband with mild distaste.
"Some of them, anyway."
She offered Panzuela her arm imperiously. He took it, bowed, and started up the broad stairs with her at his side. Adele set her hand firmly on Daniel's biceps, providing both of them with cover. That probably wasn't necessary, because Flora had welded herself to climb off. The cat seemed pleased with the attention. The priest watched them from the landing with eyes like chips of obsidian. As Daniel and Adele followed the other couples to the second floor, he caught a glimpse of the striped animal. It resumed hopping toward the far wall. Following it now were half-dozen similar creatures of half the size, making cheerful little squeals. A good omen, Daniel decided. But from the hard line of Adele's lips as she watched Flora Panzuela, he decided not to whisper the thought to her.